It is Saturday, January 3rd, 2009, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, Geek News, and 2009 technology predictions. Well, more like wishes.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about the technology we're excited about for 2009. Kind of like our predictions, but more like our technology wishes. During the second half of the show, we'll welcome you to join a conversation. You can ask us anything about, well, let's stay on topic today. Let's talk about the technology that's upcoming. And, of course, you can ask us questions about the news stories that we cover in the first half. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, I have geeks Ben Jaffe, freelance media guy, and welcome, Ben.
Hi.
We also have Sean Cleveland. Sean is the senior technical marketing manager at NVIDIA. Morning, Sean.
Good morning.
And we have Ryder Brooks, support engineer at Sun Microsystems.
Good morning.
And I don't know if he's up.
He's up. I heard
him. Oh, you're okay.
Yeah, he's beautiful. And Miles Elam, student programmer, political junkie, and today Miles is running the board.
Good morning.
I had to say that because you missed the theme song, but I still love you, man.
No, I got the theme song. I just didn't have it actually up so people could hear it.
Okay, you got the theme song? Most of California didn't? Okay, anyway. But hey, I just get to sit here and chat, so that's fun. Let's start with the geek news. I'm going to go ahead and start with Mr. Ben Jaffe.
Happy New Year's Eve, everyone. Unfortunately, it wasn't. Well, I'll start with a leap second, the International Earth Rotation and Reference Systems Services, which is a mouthful.
Yeah, say that 5 times fast.
Oh, go. I'm not going to. I'm not going to try. But we had an extra second in 2008 on December 31st at 23 hours, 59 minutes, and 60 seconds.
Wait a second.
There was a leap second added.
So it was second.
Was that minute 6 seconds or 61 seconds long?
I don't know how you would define that. What was that second? Was that second?
Well, a leap year is an extra day on February.
Yeah, so, but we have a special holder, a slot for that. We say, oh yeah, that's, you know, the February. 20th.
This whole idea of modifying time, doesn't it kind of mess with your brain? Really, every time changes for, you know, daylight savings, just figuring out that is fun and challenging.
Well, and we know why that is, right? The extra second, the planet is slowing down.
The planet is slowing down. Slowly slowing down.
Slowly, very slowly.
The rotation.
Eventually it will stop spinning.
When we say the
And then we'll have a lot of leap seconds. Like every minute we'll have.
I'm going to ask you something that you might not be able to answer. Is the orbit around the sun slowing down, or are we having an issue with days? No, we're dealing with the orbit around the sun, right?
I'm guessing yes.
Okay.
But the other New Year's news is that on the 31st...
Wait a second. Miles, that means we actually did celebrate right on time.
Right, because I was a second off.
Your timer was the second off. And we, right.
Yeah, that's what I was saying in the air room.
Okay, I respect
you. See, Lyle never listens to me.
Yeah. No, Miles, actually, I was listening to you. I was pretending like it was a live moment that we figured it out right on air for, like, good radio effect. But now you've ruined that. Do you want to pop me down, too?
Look you.
All right, go
actually,
on.
Actually, well, to clarify on that, it's not that the Earth is going more slowly around the sun. It's that the Earth spinning on an axis is slowing down.
Okay, so it's a day thing. So why would 1 second... I mean, that's really a small effect. If you have to modify our calendar by 1 second...
Well, the last one was in 2005, so that's a second every 3 years right now.
Why don't they just use rounding error? Come on. Okay, one more time. What was the name of that group?
Oh, gosh, okay.
Oh, you switched tabs.
No.
I just love the idea. Like, imagine you're the director of this group.
The director of the International Earth Rotation and Reference Systems Services.
Nice.
Service, rather.
All right.
I almost got through it without
And you had a
up,
second New Year's thing.
Yeah, so anyway, the other New Year's, the New Year's Eve news is, well, did any of the listeners, you can feel free to email us if you did. Do you guys have a 30 gigabyte Zune, and did you try to use it on New Year's Eve? Because it didn't work, at least most, all of them that I've heard of. And it's because of an error in the Zune's handling of the last day as a leap year. So all of the Zunes froze at 12:01 on December 31st.
Okay, I want to see the code
2008.
For that. Did they share the code?
Actually, yes. It's Freescale code, and it was code in a driver for a hardware part that was only in the 30 gig Zune. So I don't know. I just pulled it up while I was looking at it, but. Anyway,
I see why that code is seriously problematic.
Yeah, just like a simple, yeah. Serious, logical error.
And that Zune is actually modeled after the Toshiba Gigabit, which is not very popular at all.
And not very functional.
So it was also impacted by this.
Well, not 3 days ago, no. Yeah.
What was their solution for
that? Oh, yes, their solution. This is just amazing.
I want to guess. I haven't read the story. So Microsoft's product breaks because of a time problem. I'm going to say that they suggest changing the clock.
No, because you can't change the clock. It doesn't boot up.
What do they suggest?
It just freezes.
Oh, I have a better suggestion. Buy an iPod.
That was definitely not their solution. Their solution was wait until New Year's.
You're kidding me.
And then it'll fix itself.
You mean a year from now?
Well, 4 years from now.
No, a year from now it'll work, and then it won't work again in 4 years?
Yeah, it's a leap year problem. So every leap year, until they update it. But I mean, not many people own 30 gig Zunes because they came out with the 80 gig shortly thereafter. And
this is a driver issue, so it's not like you can really. So they have to boot BIOS update, and they can't do the BIOS update unless you can run the system. So
you just can't use it in 4 years on the. Too bad. You know,
you can't use it now either, though.
Borrow someone's iPod for your for your New Year's party
next year. All right. Wait. Are you saying that it's working again right now? Or
it's working. Oh yeah.
Oh, how
you just had to drain the battery so it would die, and then you try to boot it again.
So it just didn't work on that whole day.
It didn't work through that whole day. No.
Oh, okay. I see.
It's fine. They're fine now. But
let's go on to the next story. Thank you, Mr. Ben Jaffe. Let's go to Miles. Miles. Go for it.
Well, first off, I'd like to say congratulations, NASA, for making Mars rovers that have lasted for 5 years, even though they were originally designed for 90 days.
That's impressive.
Yeah, and I think about all the infrastructure that goes into that and the communication lines and how expensive that might be and people talking about NASA's budget. And it makes me think of communication in general and how expensive it is. Here's my nice, wonderful segue into text messaging. One of the
that
issues.
That was beautiful.
Yes.
That was seamless.
Except for me mentioning it. Mm-hmm. So what we have is text messages we've talked about on the show before being very expensive, far more expensive than they should according to technology. Turns out it's even worse than we had even hypothesized. With a cell phone, you have a certain amount of communication going on with the cell tower at all times. To say that your phone is connected, what's your connection rate, whether you're going to be receiving messages in that particular second or not. Well, it turns out text messages are sent in the control channel of that carrier signal. In other words, even if you didn't send a text message, it's exactly the same amount of bandwidth for the network carrier.
You're kidding me.
Exactly
so
the same.
They actually hold a spot of space that size of a text message.
Well, in the control carrier, there's actually just some extra space. So that 160 bytes that's allocated for a text message can just go in there
instead of
a payload.
Of course that's true. But that, I mean, so I'm not surprised by that at all, Miles. But the issue is more that the carrier has to handle that, and then they have to connect to the internet, and they have to use data to go through the internet, and that's where it costs them, money. Unquote.
Only if it leaves their network.
Right, and that's why most services, but they still charge you for text messaging in network.
In fact, they charge you more for text messaging than, say,
saying hello.
Communicating with the space shuttle.
What?
Per minute.
Like text messaging.
The amount of data they're going through.
Wait, who communicates the tech? What are you talking about, the space shuttle?
No, like how much
money it takes to send, you mean, right? Mm.
how much money it costs to send data back and forth between, like, say, the space station and the Earth. Mm-hmm. We are spending more per byte.
That's depressing.
Isn't it?
And it's free for the carriers, right? Effectively.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically they have to have that control carrier going on at all times anyway.
Right.
It's kind of like a modem signal, but you don't have to send data.
They're just exploiting the fact that they have to be sending that anyway, and they're usually not sending data in it.
Right, and charging you 15 cents per message.
20, right?
Well, it depends upon your plan. It depends upon your plan.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Miles, for that. Sean, hi.
Good morning. So yelling at your computer will not make it faster, according to tests performed by an engineer at Sun Microsystems Fishworks.
Wait, so computers have feelings?
Was this an official test, or you just start yelling at the machine to say the document is yelling?
So at Sun, in the Fishworks lab, engineer proceeded to yell and scream at his high-volume JBOD disk array.
Sorry, JBOD. What's JBOD?
It's just a bunch of disks. And what he found was that yelling at your computer actually makes it run slower because it generates vibrations that cause sharp spikes in the number of I/O operations per disk.
Did he really actually find
and
it?
And noticeable latency increases.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
It's pretty cool.
There's a video of this.
Yeah, so, it's a YouTube video.
Okay, how loud was this guy yelling? You have to yell pretty loud at a hard drive for it to cause vibration.
Ryder, you work at Sun.
Yeah, I mean, he was in a data center server room. It was pretty loud to begin with. But yeah, he was just, yelling at it. You know, like top of his voice shout, in front of the drive.
Like cupped his hands.
If these machines are already making, if the data center is very loud, which they normally are, is that slowing the machines down because there's always already an ambient noise? Or is that vibration level?
I think he determined that when he screamed, it actually slowed the drive down.
Yeah, what he did is he used a D-Trace utility that Sun provides and basically does low-level analysis and effectively real time. And it was measurable when he screamed, the disk latency increased.
I get that, and I agree, and I understand how that would work. And the question is, if you're in a loud server room and there's fans going all the time and it sounds like, all the time, is that affecting the performance of the hard drive?
Hard to say. I don't know if it's a fluctuation that would trigger it, because if it's continual uniform noise, it may cause it, but you wouldn't, unless you've taken a baseline quiet measurment and then measured it again.
Well, that seems like the next stage. Yeah. The other thing is that level of vibration might not be the threshold necessary to start affecting the
drive. He also mentioned that white noise doesn't affect it like a shot would.
Okay, that would answer.
So the fans would be white noise. All right, that's pretty cool. Thanks, Sean.
Although it's kind of interesting, like maybe technology from home theater PCs that reduce vibration and might make their way into the server room.
Right. Well, then the question is, if you're using your home PC and you're playing a loud movie with big booms and bangs, you're going to be decreasing performance.
Assuming it matters. Assuming you're at that.
Assuming
that
you don't have a cache
threshold.
Already.
Right.
And,
right.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Sean. Well, Ryder, hi.
Hi.
What's your story for the day?
So we all know about the big Wikipedia encyclopedia that's online.
Mm-hmm.
Not long ago, I think less than a week ago, they put out a plea for donations, and they had a $6 million goal that they needed to raise for funds to keep Wikipedia running. They got that in just a few days, exceeded, I think, $6.2 million, $6.3 million, a lot of money. So kudos to everyone out there on the internet for supporting Wikipedia. It's a great resource. I use it daily.
It's here to stay.
Yeah. Very an interesting little snippet came out of an article that approximately 73.4% or under 70, about 75% of all major Wikipedia edits are done by about 1,400 people.
Wow.
Which is not very many people. And these are like a core group of people that are
so you could kind of say like the power users
and a lot of them have been with Wikipedia from its onset.
I wonder how much edits those people do. Like when we say 73%, like where's the cutoff? Are they doing five or six edits a day? Do they affect hundreds of pages a piece, or do we really don't see that many edits on and they're just doing three or four a month? I'm assuming it's a lot a day. I'm assuming these people are active Wikipedia people.
Yeah, they're very active. It didn't get broken down to that level because there's always new content being created. So I don't believe it was broken down on old existing content in terms of maintenance versus.
Wouldn't
new,
these 1,400 people be highly intelligent to be able to edit that many pages?
You would hope.
Have good storytelling capabilities. I have no idea if it's.
Yeah, they're very good with finding resources for, or they're very intelligent, or very confident in their response.
Or they wait for someone else to write it and go, let me just tweak this a couple words here, and oh, look, I'm a credit.
Yeah. But, you know, I guess that brings into question, you know, the validity of the data. You know, if that few number of people are actually providing such major content, how accurate could they possibly be?
Totally get that. But the studies that people do about the content on there seem to show that Wikipedia content is fairly valid, specifically for science stories. So to some degree, it's still accurate.
But I don't believe that professors acknowledge it as an authenticated.
I think you don't want to do that. I think you want to use it as a lookup source.
Right. You cannot cite anything from Wikipedia. But then again, you could probably cite one of Wikipedia's citations.
Right. And that's the kind of point, is that you look at Wikipedia, then you look at the citation, you find that
reference. Because you always want to find the primary sources being the best sources.
You shouldn't ever actually cite encyclopedias in general, should you?
Oh, no. No, never.
So that's totally fine. All right. You know, Sean, you had another hard drive story that I was actually kind of curious about. I heard a second ago about hard drives. Can you cover that one?
Sure.
Sorry to jump around here, guys.
Newegg has finally listed the Western Digital Caviar Green 1 terabyte hard drive for sale at $120 with free shipping.
A terabyte.
Except to a few states.
Do you live in one of those states?
No.
Okay. California.
You can just drive outside your state.
So I can save $10 on a hard drive.
It looks like it's Hawaii and...
Right. Yeah, you can't drive
Alaska.
Places that are hard to drive.
So this hard drive, that's a great price for a 1 terabyte hard drive. I think that's really what makes it interesting. But this drive is only a 5,400 RPM spindle speed.
Slow.
Well, you would think, but it's actually faster than most other terabyte drives with the 7,200 RPM spindle speed.
Why?
Because those other hard drives are using 250 gig platters. So four. Of those platters, whereas the Western Digital uses 333 gig platters, and the aerial density of those three platters is higher, and it makes up the difference in performance.
So effectively, its speed is faster because there's more density to it. The head is going by more bits.
You know, according to a review at Tech Report, where there's a lot of performance data, this drive is really fast and it's quiet. Noise wise, it's really great.
Yeah, not to sound too much like a Western Digital commercial, but I have their 750 gig version of it, and it's silent, and it's
really fast.
No, one of the things I really liked about it was the fact that it was low power consumption, because I had a little dongle, so I couldn't take that much power on it. And it's also very cool in terms of temperature.
So we're impressed with this technology. It does sound like we're doing a commercial. We mentioned the price. We mentioned where you can get it. Yeah, okay,
right.
We're not doing that. We're just saying that this is pretty impressive. But the other thing that's kind of newsworthy about this, the question I have for the geeks is 1 terabyte drive a safe thing to use? Because you have one failure and you lose a terabyte of data. And normally if you've got smaller chunks of drives, you lose less of the data when the drive fails. I mean, a terabyte's a lot. A terabyte can be your entire photo collection.
Right, but at the same time, back in the day when 70 megabyte hard drives were prevalent, we had all of our data on a single 70 megabyte hard drive, which I would say the 70 megabyte hard drive was less reliable than today's terabyte.
Okay, so that's the next question. They're packing more. Are they keeping the reliability up there? I mean, this has only three heads, which is nice, or three platters. It might be six heads, one on each side. But in any case, it's still a lot of moving parts. There's still that.
But it's not moving as fast.
It's really about the price per gigabyte, though. I mean, if you
that's the thing, is I don't think it is.
Well, no, because to a certain extent. I mean, at some point, you know, well, I don't know. I'd rather get two 1 terabyte drives and have that future expandability rather than get two 500 gig drives, which are fine for me right now.
But see, you're doing the geek thing of saying, okay, if this is about $100, I need to get two of them because the one is going to fail, so I'm going to have to do a backup right away. So I'm going to buy the stuff I need necessarily to do a duplication, how us geeks think, right? You don't want to have one location of a terabyte of data.
Backup.
But the consumer goes, Power drive, terabyte, cool, I can put everything on there.
That's a good point.
They're just setting up themselves to fail. Well, so don't get one of these, get two of them.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is
I just told people to buy it. Yeah. Sorry. It's non-commercial radio, I promise. Don't buy this thing unless you want it.
If you get two 500 gig hard drives, if you get two 500 gig hard drives, it'll cost you more than getting a terabyte hard drive nowadays.
Right. So, and if one of the drives fails, you lose half your data.
Right. And speaking of hard drive failures, I believe Ben has a story regarding that.
I do. I need to find it. Give me 10 seconds.
Oh, I see how it is.
Oh, no, I got it, got it. Okay.
No, you still have 9 seconds.
Okay, go. Okay, hold on, 5 seconds.
Just four. Go.
Okay. Gosh. Okay, so RAID 0, which is taking two hard drives.
RAID 1.
RAID 1. I always get them confused.
RAID 0 is striping.
Okay, so RAID 0 is a bad idea in most cases, but RAID 1 is a good idea if you want redundancy, where you're taking two hard drives and you're copying, or you see it as one drive, and when you copy something onto it, the computer automatically copies the same data to both drives. At first glance, this looks like a great backup solution, right? Because that you always have your data safe in two places, right? But what if you accidentally delete something? Or what if an operating system error leads some data to get corrupted or something like that? Then you lose it on both drives. And that's actually exactly what happened to JournalSpace, which was a blogging site. And it is now down and dead because they had that going on. They didn't have any backups. They just had two hard drives that were in RAID 0, and they were using it as their backup.
RAID 1.
Okay.
Okay, wait a second. Why did both of them fail?
Well, it wasn't – neither of them failed. The drives are fine, but the data got overwritten.
On one drive.
Either a malicious act huge...
Right, but as soon as you say override, you're going to duplicate that on RAID 1. It's going to be the same on both
RAID
drives.
RAID 1 protects against hardware failure, but it does nothing for a software failure.
Or malicious activity, an accidental deletion.
This is like a journal site, a blog site kind of thing? Public records? Or has this stuff been private as well? Is there records that only the logged in user can see? Because if it's public, you might have it floating on the internet.
Well, actually, yeah. On one of the blogs of the people who was dealing with the site, they recommended to recover a lot of so this is a blogging site where a bunch of people will put up blog entries and everything, so they don't have to run their own servers. All the data is on JournalSpace's servers, and so JournalSpace is actually suggesting that you recover your journals via Google Cache, because Google will go through and cache web pages that everyone can access.
Sure. So that's a trick that I've seen used quite a bit by web developers. Mm-hmm. You set up a blog tool, and then spam hits it, and then the server crashes, and you never get the data back. And so you go to Google, and you slowly walk through the cache for a week until it disappears. Or you go to the Wayback Machine, which is archive.org, which also has collections of data.
Yeah, so those are both options. Mm-hmm. But as far as the original data being there on the server,
all gone.
With everything intact, kapoosh, it's gone.
It's so funny because I seem to always trust services like that. I go, okay, if I put it up on Flickr, I don't have to deal with those photos
because
they're safe for
they're,
it.
But because
if,
they would do backups.
But they
of
do
course
backups.
They would do backups.
Of course
backups.
They would.
Yeah. JournalSpace had thousands of users.
It's so funny because Miles and I had this argument about 3 months ago about whether you want to have your blog entries on a personal server at your house, like a front-end router / hard drive / web server, and that's where you put your blog, so you're responsible for it. And I said, no. You want some company to handle it so they take care of the backup solutions. You don't have to worry about it. Your house burns down, your data is still safe. And here you go, a company not doing the right thing, so yeah, keep your data.
What you need is multiple copies, one on the company server and one on your own system.
Don't sound smarter than me.
Unless it's against your company's policy to do that sort of thing.
That's a good point. What if the company is saying use that service and don't use anything else? All right, let's. We do have more news stories, and I kind of feel like continuing news, but I also want to leave room for predictions / technical wishes. So let me just run through the news stories. Well, Miles, you've been done one in a while. Go ahead, do one.
Facebook has long had a policy barring nudity on their site. One of the goals of it is that it's social networking, but it is not supposed to be for people to distribute, for example, porn.
It's a major issue whenever you produce a service on the internet and you give free bandwidth and free storage space, that if you make it available for porn people, porn will just cover
right.
your network because
and,
it's an easy way to distribute it.
Right.
So and, they basically make a rule to protect the service load, really.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There's that issue, and there's also the issue of Facebook is available to people who are also under the age of 18.
Right.
So that becomes a whole liability issue. Now, what has caused a problem is because Facebook has started deleting breastfeeding photos. And there's where the line gets fuzzy, where people are saying, well, no, we don't allow the naked breast to be shown on mm-hmm. on Facebook, on these types of sites. And yet, this is something that many people consider just a natural course of things. It's not meant to titillate. It's meant to...
No pun intended.
It's meant to simply show the child.
Right.
And it actually reminds me very much of the issues of people getting prosecuted because they took a picture of their 2-year-old
right.
child in their bathtub. Pictures that we've seen and have been recorded for...
Right. We don't think about them, really. They're just kids being
right.
kids.
But by putting them up on the web,
right.
you're distributing, and then people have been hit with a child pornography suit.
Right. I just took down a photo of my niece or something that was online that was a nude shot, and I didn't even realize it. And my sister saw it and went, hey. And I went, oh, yeah, that's right.
Right. But you made an excellent point that night, which was there are some people who their thing is tractors.
Tractors was the example, right?
Right. So do you bar tractors being on there? Because normal people are not attracted to
right. tractors or children.
Children.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So they said no to breastfeeding, and there's a bit of an uproar because people are like, hey, you shouldn't say no to that. That's a natural, normal thing. Why label it as inappropriate? And it really comes down to where do they draw the line,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you could theoretically...
Do you draw the line that? On do you show nipple or not?
Right,
is
right.
it... But what if the baby's covering? What's the... And it's this weird...
It's one of those issues that you have to do when you're dealing with services and lots of different people's preferences and tastes. You know, I mean, a lot of people would assume that a bare bottom is not a problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of come down to where the issue is. And of course, Facebook's a U.S. run company, so the United States' perspective on nudity and things that are profane is what rules. But if you were in England, nudity, you know, is not even really problematic.
Or other parts of Europe would be even more.
That's
so.
Right. So anyway, interesting. Facebook had to deal with that, and so they decided no. They said no.
So far, Facebook has said no, and there's an ongoing battle there because more and more mothers are coming out saying, wait a second.
There's another reason for distributed ownership. So you have a service that connects people and all that, but you actually store your stuff locally. And if you make the technical inroads for those things to connect, then it's your responsibility that you put the breastfeeding shot up on your site.
But then logically from that, it follows that if people want to do porn shots, then...
Yes.
As long as they're serving it, then that's...
Well, it's not illegal to do that, but then again, you're going to incur the price if it gets really popular, right? I don't have the answer, but thank you for the story. So Miles, is that one of your predictions this year? This idea that more content will be distributed by individuals, not necessarily services, but some kind of home solution will occur where you're more responsible. Wish for that?
I would wish for it, but I would wish for it in the same way that I wish that more people voted. I don't necessarily know that that's going to be the case.
Depression state? That's the voting thing.
Most likely the opposite is going to occur.
Yeah, as people start
seeing growth of online services.
Right.
Yeah, as things get tighter, people are going to, I think, have less time for things like, oh, my blog entry, I should take care of that. Like, no, I'm going to spend more time trying to get more money so I can pay rent.
Right. And, you know, this just harkens back to Ben's story about this journal service that lost its data. One of the first geek thoughts about that was, oh, well, now that they did that, they'll never do that again. And other companies that do the same thing will make sure to have backup because they had so much negative press, right? So all mm-hmm. the companies out there that are doing this kind of stuff will make sure to do backups at this point. So now it's even safer. It's a good thing that a company failed publicly and
it's a good, 100. That's with that logic, after Enron failed, all businesses would have worked out wonderfully. I don't know that...
You are such a pessimist today, Miles. Is it being in control of the board you feel like you have power? Is that why I'm such a jerk most of the time? Okay. Ben, do you have something to say?
I just have a really quick news story, which is no more texting while driving.
Oh, that's right. And actually,
January
1st.
Reminder, right.
Yeah.
That's just a reminder to everyone.
So don't text while you're driving.
Yeah. And don't forget that includes cell phones for all those people I've seen over the last year still using their cell phone in the car.
Right.
Oh,
you
shouldn't
have a portable device in your hand while you're driving.
Yeah.
So here's a little trick. I mean, you can normally, you can't turn off most phones from texting, so you're going to receive the message anyway. Don't look at it. Don't do it.
Just don't.
Put it into silent mode when you get into the
this
car.
This is just in California.
Toss the phone into the back of the car, and then you won't.
In other states and countries.
Didn't stop me. I did it this morning.
You did?
Yeah.
Wait, I was in the car with you this morning.
No, before I picked you up.
Okay, good. Keep it that way. This law, when the laptops in the front seat said, you know, there was a law in California saying no more laptops in the front seat, mostly because people were modifying their car's engine real time with their laptops. That still holds that if you're a passenger in the front seat and you've got a laptop, you've got a problem. Like, that's not – that's actually –
right. Was that the reason why it was brought up? I thought it was just because it was distracting to the driver.
No, no. What was happening was a lot – it was one of those stupid laws. From my understanding, the laptop law had to do with people taking mostly their Civics – Honda Civics, and modifying the engine with a card, like you put a card in, and you then use your laptop to check out performance and have the laptop's brain doing better performance algorithms for you so you can take off faster. So it was for people racing on the streets. And what happened is a lot of people that got caught for speeding tickets, the cops were like, you were going 120 miles an hour, and they kept on seeing these laptops in the front seat. So finally they're like, let's get rid of the laptops in the front seat. Like, it's totally stupid law.
So buckshot,
that was my
elephant gun approach.
Yeah, like the wrong way to do it. But in any case, that law seems to me, if you're in the front seat, a passenger's in the front seat using a laptop, the driver could still get ticketed. So I'm curious about the texting.
Yeah, to be fair, I didn't text while driving.
Right.
I text at a stoplight.
Right. That's the point
but
I think.
But really I am important. Driving.
Right. Nobody, I mean.
Yeah, what if you pull over
I'm
and
just
your car
sitting
is
there,
running?
You know?
And that's the thing with traffic. And Sean, you said this when we heard about this law coming down the pipe, is that you sit in traffic, you don't move literally for 5 minutes, 10 minutes. That's enough time to check email.
Except that you are then the person now that the lights turn green for the last 15 seconds and you're sitting there and people are honking. You're like, oh, oops.
Yeah, that's true. But shouldn't that be the crime?
Yeah, what about shaving?
That you're not paying attention?
What about shaving and
reading
the
newspaper?
Right,
what about daydreaming? What about talking to somebody in the car?
I see people reading the newspaper while they drive.
Yeah.
That's against the law, right?
That Mr. Bean skit where he's getting dressed while driving.
Texting is against the law, but reading the newspaper is probably okay.
I mean, that might fall under like reckless driving.
I'm sure it is illegal.
Hey, Miles, let's talk to Josh and Salinas.
Sure.
Line one.
On line one, we have
Josh. Hi, Josh. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi. Thanks a lot. It's a pleasure speaking with the geeks. I have a son in college, and I'm not independently wealthy. And he's interested in us buying him one of the new miniature laptops. We saw them at Costco, and they're interesting little creatures.
Called netbooks.
Yes. I was wondering whether you think these are really worth the minimal savings.
Depends on what you're doing. If all you're doing is web browsing and checking email, then they're wonderful. If you want to play games.
We talked a bit about them last week, actually, if you want to listen to the show. But in general, if you don't want a game on them, and you don't want to edit video, then yeah, these things work great. The one thing about them, though, is the keyboards are small.
Okay. A follow-up question. Now, if we get him one of these, we're an Apple family. If we get him one of these, PCs really have to take your antivirus stuff a lot more seriously.
Yes.
Do you have any recommendations for like entry-level virus protection on a new PC?
Well, you're doing the first step. You're making sure that it's his machine, not yours. You'll be safe.
There you go.
I'm going to go still with AVG, which is a product that seems to be pretty good. AVG is the free virus protection software we suggest on GeekSpeak. We've been suggesting for like a couple of years.
Yeah, another
now.
One AVG. I like is Ubuntu.
So Miles, that is a really good option, actually, if you're going to get a brand new laptop. The problem is, these laptops, they are doing very high volume, small components, compressed the heck out of it, right? Everything on that's kind of unusual in the sense that one vendor grabs all these parts from these different people, make a product, and then they make sure that they've got drivers for Windows, and that's it. So when you go ahead and try to put Ubuntu on it, you might run into problems. But it's really easy to test. You just get a live CD from Ubuntu, throw it on the machine, and see if wireless works.
Except you don't have CD.
Yeah, you'd need an external CD drive.
Yeah, no, you're going to have an external CD drive for this thing because the idea of not being able to reinstall Windows is ridiculous. You have to be able to reinstall Windows on a machine. So when you get this drive, also get a USB optical drive.
So it's
another $50, right?
Yeah.
Right, and people were laughing when I said Ubuntu, but at the same time, if what you're doing with this device is web browsing and email,
right.
that's exactly your
sweet
spot.
Why not do it, right?
Yeah, because then you really don't have to worry about viruses.
Right, and the next thing he's going to be doing is he's going to be watching videos online, which means he needs Flash, and that's on Ubuntu too. So really, you've got pretty much everything you need.
Oh, come on.
Well, it's a netbook. What else are you going to do on it?
Windows is fine. Don't listen to these guys.
Well,
and you know, this whole virus, you know, baiting and scare is just, come on, it's not that bad.
Yeah. Well, on the just contrary, careful. Microsoft just cleaned off.
Don't use Internet Explorer. What were you saying, Miles?
Download Firefox or Chrome.
Microsoft, in their update tool, just removed something that was called Antivirus 2009, and it was infecting 400,000 computers. It's not in our imagination.
Well.
Sean uses Windows.
Just
all
get rid
the
of Windows and be scared of your PC.
No. If you have a full system, it absolutely makes sense to have Windows. If you're playing games, if you have a whole bunch of high-powered applications,
all
if
my
you
son wants
laptop.
To do is take his notes and do the occasional reference check on the net. He says. So
he
actually, that's a reasonable option.
You think it's reasonable, but there's a lot of complexity of going to Ubuntu, yeah. right? So someone says, hey, try out this application because it's really cool for chatting. Okay, it doesn't work. I mean, there's going to be that kind of thing happens all the time. And what Sean's saying
is a positive.
that could be a positive. I can see mm-hmm. that. The other thing, though, keep in mind that the geeks all have Windows machines. We use them all the time. And I personally don't run any virus protection at all. And the reason for that is that I'm conscious of what I'm doing and I make sure I'm on a private network. When you're on a laptop, it's a little more dangerous because you go to networks that are non-secure. You're using non-secure protocols all the time, a little more risky. But the biggest thing to do with that, you know, if you get the optical drive and you make sure you have his data stored, theoretically, it's just going to be papers and stuff, right? He should be able to use his free public storage space online to make sure all his stuff is backed up. If he ever gets a virus, he thinks the machine's running slow, you take the optical drive, you get the CD, you reinstall the operating system. Case closed.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Good luck, Josh. Thank you so
Thanks
much for calling.
All right.
Bye-bye. I think it's an important point, which you brought up, Lyle, of you take a laptop to various different places, it's going to be an issue. It's going to be more of a risk. Mm-hmm. And Sean, with all due respect, you're a geek. You know how viruses are transmitted. You know how that works, and you know what the dangers are, far more so than the average person. So it's not necessarily a hatred of Windows. It's more of what I was talking about before of most people don't care enough to take mm-hmm. those precautions.
Well, you know, mm-hmm. we're getting pretty smug here about being Mac users and Linux users and thinking that we're invulnerable to these kind of viruses and Trojans. You know, I've gotten a Trojan on my Linux server, you know, through a DNS
That's
exploit.
True. Yeah, sure.
It's happened to me. They do exist for Macs. It's not like there are no
right.
viruses
when
Macs.
When you're running
they
a server.
Are out there.
Right, when you're running a server. But as a client, though.
No, for Linux. But Mac, there are client stuff coming up. I mean, Macs are what, they've hit like the 10% mark of the market now. You know, the people that are creating malware and viruses, they're going to start targeting Macs. You know, it was just because it wasn't in their best interests and efficient for them to target it towards Macintoshes before because they weren't that popular. So, I mean, it inevitably there will be problems with Macintoshes, and I think we should stop telling people that you're safe because you're on a Mac.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not saying forever, but for now, I think it's a fair statement to say you are safer on a Mac than you are on a Windows machine.
I wanted to let you guys all know about one new story that I heard about that I thought was pretty cool. That the we've talked about augmenting the human body to compensate for disabilities. The ear implants have been around for a long time, and people are able to hear even if their inner ear is broken. You kind of attach farther mm-hmm. back in the brain, then you connect, and you got audio. And I have a family friend who's had that for, I don't know, 20 years, something like that. In any case, the newest thing that's going to be actually in human trials within the next year is a bionic eye for the blind. And basically it's a chip that goes in the back of the Don knew what this was exactly. In any case, inside the eye. And there's a video camera that goes on the glasses. The signal is transmitted in, and you get a 70-pixel – now, I don't mean 70 like by 70. I mean 70 pixels of information about what's in your world. And in the early trials and stuff, that's actually worked to allow people to navigate through a building and stuff. So bionic eyes within the year. Pretty cool, I thought.
That's pretty amazing.
So the next question is, of course, if you get the 70-pixel one or the 100-pixel one, are you then going to be in a situation where you want the upgrade, right? You need 30 more pixels or whatever. And can the eye be modified? And are they making sure that the first person to get the 70 pixels in one eye and then 2 years later they get 300 pixels in the other eye, can they then, you know, the next step
get
1,200
really
pixels in the right eye and all that stuff, right?
Probably get really dizzy.
And then the next thing, of course, is are you really trying to reproduce sight? Are you trying to make it easier to navigate the world? And that idea is interesting. And it's a black and white, by the way. It's just white dots, supposedly.
But at least it would be able to show motion, be able to see that light and dark.
Do you know if it has grayscale or if it's just black and white?
It's just white dots, actually, like 70 white dots.
So it's like one bit color.
Yeah, and it's actually probably not even mapping very well. Like the human brain is really good about taking visual data and making it work for the brain.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Miles?
Get closer to the mic.
Oh, sorry about that. So the human eye is really good about doing that. or the human brain is really good about that, doing that. So what they're actually doing is they're kind of using most of the surface of the back of the eye and putting stuff on it, right? So they're kind of, even though we see a lot of content, you're going to imagine your entire field being a very different perspective, so that your entire field is only a very narrow path, right? A telephoto lens, if you will. Your whole eye turns into telephoto. Mm. So it's going to remap completely. It's not going to be like the eye in the sense that we're going to have that kind of pseudo 35 millimeter type of
Do you know
angle.
If you can move these eyes around with your muscles in your eye?
No, what? How does there's a video camera on a pair of glasses.
And okay, so you're kind of like an owl where you've got this really, really narrow field and you have to turn your head?
Yeah, I would assume it's kind of like that. It's probably, you know, the perspective of what it is probably set, but the brain has to have to compensate. Anyway, it sounds,
that's really
sounds
cool.
Fascinating. I'd like to know more about it. And see the human trials, of course. Okay, let's go on to some predictions and excitement for the year, upcoming year. Ryder, what are you excited about, or what are your predictions?
Well, I predict it's probably going to be a slow year, actually, because of the economic downturn.
Uh-huh.
I think probably what I see happening is a lot more focus on the green IT, you know, kind of efficiency in the computer networking, a lot more virtualization with, you know, consolidating servers.
Saving storage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or saving power and such.
And mostly because, you know, I think this year a lot of companies are going to be tightening the purse strings and not buying new hardware.
Okay, but some people claim, Ryder, just to counter that idea, that mm-hmm. in an economic downturn you have people being laid off, you have people making less money, and a lot more time on their hands, which allows them to think and work out problems. So you see innovation during times of slowdown.
Sure.
Small level innovation, things that take.
And I think that innovation is going to be coming more in virtualization.
Okay.
It's been going on for the last few years, and I just think there's just going to be further advancement and refinement, and making it perform better.
What's one technical wish you'd have for this upcoming year? Like, you'd really like this service, or you'd really like this product. What is it for you?
Personally, I would like to see more development in sort of home automation and home media center kind of development.
You want to make your home as technically rich as your laptop.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's like it's a constant struggle. Like, I don't have the TiVo, but I have the Replay. And, mm-hmm. you know, and a lot of people have the DVRs built into the cable boxes. And everyone's just kind of got all these different methods of getting their data. And
it's very much a self-exploratory experience where you've got to figure out your own system, and then you go to somebody else's place. It's completely different. You've got benefits. They've got benefits.
Yeah.
And it's like this trade-off.
And it's like you can't necessarily go to your friend's house and figure out their jerry-rig system right away. So I would love to see that more going mainstream, and a lot more people having uniform methods of mm-hmm. accessing their data that's user-friendly, simplified, and elegant.
And when you say home automation, you also mean like unlocking your doors and starting up your water heater at the right time, things like that?
Things like that. You know, things that would make sense. You know, there's some things that are just silly. Like, you know, I think, you know, having your refrigerator talk to you and tell you when your milk's out of date is a little silly, you know, method of home automation. But yeah, having your lights turn on and you're making sure that your heaters
I would love electronic entrance into my house, right? So that I can, through the network, say, you know, Ryder's going to go by and pick up a keyboard, so make sure to let him in today. That kind of thing mm-hmm. seems to be quite useful. Okay, let's go to Ben. What do you want to see?
Briefly, actually, I just want to say I found this project online where they used USB keys for home entrance, and they'd put a they'd actually program in the signature of the USB key into the lock, and so you'd use your USB, your little fob, instead of a key to enter into your house, and
cool.
you could program in your friends, and you could even have, you know, like, between these times, these people are allowed and whatever, but... 2009, I've got a few of them.
Can I ask something about
sure.
that? Have you actually had a USB drive just kind of fail on you because you're using it a lot?
Mm-mm.
Does that happen very often?
It's no, the one thing actually, about... I would find them to be extremely reliable for myself.
All right. Huh. Go on, then.
Battery technology. I'm really... Like, there have been a couple articles about getting, like, you know, 24-hour battery life and everything. And, of course, this is all just research at this point, but it'd be amazing to see it actually come to fruition in some products. There's some wireless charger technology that is also in the research phase, where you can take your cell phone and just put it on this pad and it'll charge it through
inductance.
The, that just sounds amazing to me too. I'm also looking the things I'm looking forward to that I know are coming, or I'm pretty sure are coming, is Snow Leopard, which is Apple's new operating system update.
Why are you interested in it?
There are a lot of small okay, their marketing is not like, oh, you know, all these new features and everything, but instead kind of fixing it up, you know, optimizing it, refining it, making it faster. And I don't know, Leopard's getting a little bit slow for me. I've got a bunch of stuff on, so.
Okay, next, you got one more?
One more is the Red Scarlet camera, which is going to be, I hope, going to be spectacular.
You know, and this has been being talked about for like 2 years. We're talking about low-cost, high-quality, very
like higher
modifiable
than
camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A video camera.
Video camera.
And as a media guy, I can see why you'd want that, definitely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, LED light bulbs is the last one.
More LED, like home LED light bulbs?
I want to see the price down to like $10 a bulb.
Right.
Right now it's like 90 or something like that.
Yeah, too expensive.
Do you have
even though it's cool?
I do not.
Does anyone
have like, well, I have a flashlight, but yeah. I've heard that there are problems with using them as like a conventional, you know, house light bulb because of they're too directional, like getting
right.
Yeah, there are a slew of problems.
Yeah.
Well, that and their manufacturer still uses a great deal of fossil fuels.
Yes, and
true.
And also the color temperature of the resulting light and getting that to look like
white.
An incandescent, because that's what we like to see.
Right. Yeah, we don't get
a little
full spectrum
warm.
Out of them.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much for that. Sean, predictions or wishes for the upcoming future or that story about Windows I'm kind of curious about?
Yeah. Windows 7's coming out.
Windows 7.
That's a prediction.
The beta was released.
Most likely it will come out this next year.
Okay. Do you really think so?
But to be honest, I think 2009 is going to be a year of evolutionary upgrades.
Right. Kind of like
instead
what Apple's
of
doing with
revolutionary.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll see any new revolutionary products, especially in the chip sector. I think you're going to see a lot of the same chips that have already been released, maybe in new form factors, but you won't see, you know, exciting new technologies.
Do you think that's because of the economic shift? Yeah.
I think it's mostly because of economic.
Right.
But even with Snow Leopard, it's just focusing on performance improvements and bug fixes.
Is Windows 7 like that?
Yeah, of course. And in hardware-wise, I just don't think you're going to see anything new from Apple. I mean, not like an iPod or an iPhone or a smaller laptop like a netbook. I don't know.
The other day we were at the movie theater, you have a new portable device, and your new portable device doesn't have a mute switch, right?
My new portable device? Your,
what do you have for a phone? Do you use for a phone?
Oh, my BlackBerry.
Your BlackBerry, right.
Yeah.
So your older BlackBerry did have a kill switch,
I had
right?
a Palm Treo that had a physical switch. To make it...
To go into vibrate.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things where you updated and you lost a feature. Are there anything in your life right now that you're wishing would work a little bit better that you're hoping this year you'll see, like a BlackBerry with a switch? Simple things like that. Do you have anything like that that's eating at you?
I don't really care about that.
Okay. Fair enough.
You know, I've been using the same technology for the last 3 to 4 years, and I just...
Yeah. Okay, what
I don't
about...
I don't see any reason to upgrade.
The news story kind of talked also about something about XP and Vista. And that shift, we're gonna see in this year a lot.
Yeah, go to geekspeak.org and we'll have a story up that talks about the performance of Windows 7 Beta 1.
Oh, okay, cool. Okay, it's a good read.
Yeah.
All right, I'll put that up right now. All right, thank you for that. And Miles, you're up, man. Predictions?
I predict that open source will find a bigger audience, just because you have things like netbooks that we were talking about before, where price is really an issue.
Mm.
And when price is really an issue, the license cost for Windows becomes a major issue. And if
or even for Office, for that matter.
Right. And if price is a major issue, it automatically knocks out the Apple laptops. At least MacBook Air, I mean, is so expensive as compared to the, you know, $300 or $400 netbook that people can buy these days.
Right.
I also see their power, the netbooks, their processing power getting a lot better. And I think we will start to see more media center PCs that are based upon the guts of a netbook rather than the guts of a PC,
mm-hmm.
and start having those show up that are general purpose computers for your home theater, but actually look more like components, like DVDs.
Right? Well, I think you're going to see HD playback capability in cell phone. I think you'll see cell phones with mini HDMI ports that you hook up to your PC or to your TV, and you can stream movies off it. That'll be coming.
In a phone?
Yeah.
Okay, I wouldn't mind that. I mean, the screen wouldn't be big enough, but of course you'd be able to watch the movie while you transport and then plug it into your TV when you get home
right,
and finish
right.
it.
The screen on the phone's certainly
right,
not great.
Right.
But the chips that are in the phones now are going to be powerful enough to drive HD content on an external monitor.
Okay, that's a real prediction. I'll hold you to that.
Do you see that as likely this year?
I work at NVIDIA. We've already shown it.
Okay.
With the Tegra chip. Yeah.
So it's possible.
They can push 720p HD video. They can stream it. It's got, even with 7 hours off a phone to an external monitor. Yeah. I've already seen the demo.
Is that what's... I mean, are the Android phones going to take over more this year, you guys? You think the Android, that's the Google phone, do you think that you're going to see more of that form factor?
My friend just got one, and it was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
You could see that growing?
I mean, I could see it growing.
I could see getting one of those if it's got an HD chip in it. I mean, geez, that makes the phone a really
I don't know how popular the Android phones are going to be per se, but I mean, I guess I should say that backwards. I think that Android's going to take over from a lot of the other phones. Like,
I don't know. I had
the
a friend who worked
phones
at,
are going to go away.
We had a friend that worked at Google, and he had a. They all got Android phones,
mm-hmm.
but he still uses his iPhone.
That's true.
But he's keeping his Android phone as a collectible item.
I guess that's what I think the Android phones aren't going to challenge iPhones, but they're going to eat away at the other bits of the market. I think they're going to take away from BlackBerries and the like.
All right. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence.
And I don't think so.
Used with permission. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a weekly hour-long radio quiz program. Each week on the radio, you can test your knowledge against some of the best and brightest in the news and entertainment world while figuring out what's real news and what's made up. On the web, you can play along, too. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Saturday at noon, and Sunday at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KSP. You are listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KSP, Santa Cruz, KBDH, San Arto, on the web at kusp.org. On the GeekSpeak website, of course, you can hear more information. You can read more information about all the news stories we cover, including some extra things, which I'll tell you in just a second. But first, I wanted to say thanks to the geeks today, which Miles Elam, Ryder Brooks, Ben Jaffe, and Sean Cleveland. Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And, of course, answering the phones for us every week for years now, Rick is, the only way to talk to him and hear his voice, of course, is to call in. So please do so. Next week, we're on every Saturday at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. Coming up next, of course, is the Car Talk Guys. But let me tell you a couple extra things you can see on the GeekSpeak website. That is a news story by Miles, Flash and Safari Privacy Fail. From Sean, a survey about Microsoft's whole top patent portfolio for 2008. FireTorrent adds BitTorrent powers to Firefox. Again, thanks for Sean. The biggest black hole in the universe actually has some more information about its gravitational well because there's a second one orbiting it, which is very cool, from Sean. Thank you. And, of course, we have other news stories and more information about what we talked about today on GeekSpeak. Geeks, thank you so much for being here. Let's see. One more thing to say. Anything else to say? Next week's show. Somebody was setting that up. Ben, you setting that up?
No, not confirmed.
Not confirmed, but will be really amazing, I'm sure.
If it's confirmed. If it happens.
Thank you very much for listening to GeekSpeak today. Go to the forums if you want to ask us more questions. If ever you have corrections for us, if you've got more information for us because we're not really covering everything, please let us know. You can do that by calling us during the show, or you can send us an email or go to the forums and tell us what we're doing wrong because, of course, we need more geek information. We always do need help. So anything you can share with us, we will appreciate and, of course, share on air if it's appropriate. For GeekSpeak and for KOSP, my name's Lyle Troxell. I'll see you next week.